everyone. This is Molly Douthat.
And David Douthat.
Welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to use multiple intelligences in sermons and worship leadership, because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today's podcast will cover the lectionary selections for Year A, the 31st Sunday in Ordinary Time. Joshua and the Israelites cross the River Jordan, ending the long wilderness wanderings to begin a new life in the land of their ancestors. In Matthew, Jesus talks about obedience to the law and humility for disciples. End your wanderings. We have the multiple intelligence theory illustrations you want for your sermon this week.
We have established this podcast based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week, we develop illustrations and special effects for the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary and use various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. We call them word smart, eye smart, math smart, body smart, music smart, nature smart, people smart, and self smart. If you'd like to, you can read more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking on the link at the top of our webpage.
As we read and reflect on the scripture passages for each week, we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. Anytime and any way we make use of the different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God, so they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. So let's get started.
The Old Testament lesson for Year A, Ordinary 31, is Joshua 3, verses 7 through 17. We've leaped over some things that have happened in the book of Joshua. We're sort of picking up Joshua's leadership experience after Moses' death at the end of Deuteronomy in last week's passage. So the big push for Joshua's leadership at this point in the book is leading the people into the land, which is what we've been working on for the last 40 years in the Exodus and Deuteronomy passages. So Joshua does what God tells him to, obeys the directions, selects people from the 12 tribes, and then they set out across the Jordan. When the priest's toes touch the waters of the Jordan, the river backs up and the people cross on dry land. Where have we heard that before? The dry land crossing experience over a body of water bookends their departure from the land of Egypt, and the story ends. And then it begins again. So we are going to do something kind of ambitious today. We have decided not to do anything with the Thessalonians passage for this week because we both had really long, busy weekends this past weekend and didn't really spend enough time looking at it. And there's really not a lot there,
to be honest. Yeah.
So we've decided to
put... I mean, I like a challenge, but that's, come on.
Yeah. If we had a little bit more energy and hadn't had the long weekend, yeah, it might have happened. Yeah, but anyway, so we've decided to punt the Thessalonians passage. So we're going to spend more time on the Old Testament and Gospel passage. So we are ambitious with this one. We've got something for all of the intelligences. We have illustration and special effect for word, eye, math, body, nature, people, self, and we have an illustration for music. So we got them all. Let's get started then, hon.
All right. For Word Smart, we start off with a poem entitled Into the River, and we put it in word because literary, but it could also be music because poetry and rhythm. Mm-hmm. But it is called Into the River, and it is from a blog called A Poetic Kind of Place by Andrew King. And we're not going to read the whole thing for you, but just to give you a flavor, it starts off, "Take the covenant with you into the river, the boundary river, the risky river, between future and past, between fear and hope, whose swirling depths can dislodge your feet. Take the covenant with you into the river." And it goes on from there. So
yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a neat poem. So that would work pretty well here. Then for a word special effect, try writing your sermon as a first-person account of someone who is part of the company of those going across the river, part of the company now following Joshua into the land, maybe somebody who had been a fan of Moses, mm-hmm. and now they have to follow Joshua, mm-hmm. or one of the priests who's bearing the Ark of the Covenant, or an adult whose grandparents were slaves in Egypt, or a child who has only ever known the wilderness as home, or even as Joshua. And this would be word because of
the sermon.
Yeah. And it, because of the dramatic nature of doing a monologue sermon like mm-hmm. that, then it could also be considered people smart because drama engages the people smarts.
For iSmart, I was poking around and I found snacks online that you can use food to make visual representations of this event. You can make an Ark of the Covenant out of Rice Krispie treats. You really can. It's amazing. We have a link to that.
Do you have to cover it with gold?
No.
Oh,
okay. I would not. And then you can have priests carry it across a Jello Jordan River. Honestly, it's kind of amazing. We have links
it's
to
adorable.
Both of those. So you can go over to our website at www.morethanhearing.org and take a look at the links and try that. And then you can add Body Smart to this experience by eating them at fellowship.
Mm.
So that's an illustration. For a special effect, pull out the maps. Anytime there is any traveling or any distances to be covered in a story, you can demonstrate that in iSmart by using maps, because that shows representations of distance traveled. That's the iSmart part of that. Also, it engages the eye in that you can see where this all happens. So that's, maps are always, always an excellent option for a special effect for iSmart.
For MathSmart, verse 16 talks about the waters flowing down the river standing in a heap at the town called Adam. So looked up some things about that, and we have a link to an article about how to engineer diverting and damming a river, just in case you are curious about how you would do that intentionally, or in case you ever need to do that. It's kind of long and involved, so, you know, but the math logical brain loves engineering sorts of stuff, and so it's kind of a step-by-step process, and that could give you something to work with for the sermon. Also, we have an article on some historical and archaeological evidence of incidents when the Jordan was blocked, either from bridges collapsing or from other natural things. And the Jordan River's, the valley is a fault line, actually. So there are hurricanes.
Hurricanes, yeah, right.
The other thing. There are earthquakes that happen there. And so sometimes that causes disturbances in the water. And
it could change the riverbed, couldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And there was a situation at one point in history where during flood, like in this story, one of the banks got undercut upriver and collapsed and blocked the river for like a day and a half or something, or half a day. So that would be a natural explanation of how this would happen. And of course, the miraculous part is that it happened when they needed it to.
Exactly.
Right. So there's that. So again, this is math smart because the logical brain wants to know how did the river stop flowing?
Right.
Right. And so there you have that. For special effect, we have some models that we're going to talk about in Nature Smart. So when we get down there, you'll hear more about that. But if you choose to make a model of the river valley, as we will soon be talking about, then you can dam it up using these processes here and show that off.
For Body Smart, we're thinking about how people would have approached the water as they were beginning to cross it. So talk about that funny dance step you do when you're out in the rain or just after it's rained, and there's a big puddle in the middle of your path, and you have to get over it. It's that really high, long step, reaching for the far edge, falling forward, and trying to kick up your back foot so as not to drag it through the water or fall back into it.
Yeah.
Or if you're a kid, you just take a running leap at it, and you go over the top of it. Or if you're a kid, you just stomp right through who cares?
Yeah. Or somehow trying to go fast through it makes people think that they can get across it without
like you're going to run across it or something. Not sink into it. We also have some links to penguins trying to cross water, or some people trying to cross a puddle, or a live feed video of a puddle in Newcastle, the United Kingdom, that went viral. Or this particular guy who failed to cross safely. So we'll have all of those links up at our website. So you go over there and take a look at them and spend a little time laughing. right?
Yes, absolutely.
The point being is that people can tend to get stymied by puddles. So you can imagine what it would have been like when they walked up to a river and we have to cross that? Good heavens. So there's also some nature smart and some self-smart. The nature smart being the water and self-smart being, how am I going to get across that? And a question, what if God took that obstacle out of your way? What then? So for a special effect, as you're talking about how we do that weird step to get over a puddle, do the weird step.
Yeah.
Demonstrate it.
For Music Smart, we have a number of songs to bring to your attention, and they are about crossing the Jordan River, which, of course, has become the metaphor for going from this life to the life to come. And so we have four of those. When I Cross the River Jordan by Patrick Riley, and The Jordan River by Shirley Caesar, and River of Jordan by Peter, Paul, and Mary, and The Far Side Banks of Jordan. And we have two versions of that for you, Jimmy Fortune and Johnny and June Carter Cash. So take a listen to those and see if they might work into your sermon as well.
For Nature Smart, we're still looking at the idea of the water heaping up in verse 13. So we have a link to an article from Wikipedia about hydraulic jump. A hydraulic jump is essentially that phenomena that happens if you think about when you turn on your sink and you've got a lot of water going into your sink and then you get that rim effect around your drain. So you've got the water running and you've got the water going down the drain. So it's kind of this competing and clashing fluid dynamics. Yeah, this water flow. So it's also kind of a math thing because of the science in it, but we put it here in nature because it's cool. And then another illustration for Nature Smart, according to Wikipedia, the flow rate of the Jordan River was once 1.3 billion cubic meters per year. And now, as of 2010, just 20 to 30 million cubic meters per year flow down into the Dead Sea. That's a significant drop.
It is.
And David did the calculations, and he said that's about 0.634 cubic meters per second down from 41.2 cubic meters per second. So that's a significant change if you look at those numbers. The Mississippi has an outflow rate of over 16,000 cubic meters per second. So that kind of gives you a little bit of contrast there between a couple rivers in the world nowadays. So there's been a diversion of 70 to 90% of the river's flow for human use over 50 years that God did in one day. So, wow.
Yeah.
Big change. Now, for the special effect, David already mentioned it back up in MathSmart, we found some models. So we have a link to them. So set up a model that shows the elevation drop of the Jordan, because that would explain also the amount of water that's coming through. The headwaters of the Jordan are at Mount Hermon, which is 9,000 or so feet above sea level. And it ends at the Dead Sea, which is 1,400 feet below sea level. It's one of the fastest flowing rivers of its size because of that elevation drop. So you can use Kinects, if they still make them, or Tinker Toys, if they still make them, or use Legos, they do still make those for sure, or try a model that we have a link to from 3D Geography. One of them uses cardboard, and everybody's got cardboard.
Yeah.
So give that a try and set it up, and then you can use it to demonstrate the elevation drop, and then also dam it if you want to.
For people smart, right at the beginning of the passage in verse 7, Joshua would want and need to make a good impression as he took over for Moses. And God gives him the promise that that's going to happen, and God promises to help make it happen, and then follows through. And so we have a link to an article that gives some tips for people taking over new leadership positions. And it's written by a fellow named Bob Whipple, who's an MBA. And he suggests, among other things, that you assume that more things are right than wrong, that you try to establish rapport with people one-on-one, build trust as early as possible, avoid pushing ideas from your former job, observe the informal organizations and cliques, practice management by wandering around extensively until you are a known quantity, and smile. Now, for Joshua, he just said, we're going to cross this river, but it worked. So that was good.
Well, he also had God backing him up.
He
too,
did indeed. So. He did indeed. Yeah. So anyway, there's some stuff that you can take a look at. And there's much more about each of those items in the article. But that idea of making the transition and making a good impression as a leader so you can build the trust. For special effect, break folks up into groups to discuss their own experiences with change in leadership. Of course, you want to be mindful if you are in a situation where that has been a problem.
Right.
So tread carefully if that's an issue. But generally speaking, you could ask questions like these. Was the change expected? And was the transition smooth or were there a lot of bumps? And how did the change affect morale? And how did the change affect the group's effectiveness? So these are all people smart ideas because of the connections and the relationships that are being discussed here and the dynamics of leadership as how to influence people. And plus, in the special effect, you have the bonus of people talking to people, which makes it people smart just by its nature.
And then finally, for self-smart, we're still sticking with verse 7. We're looking at how this idea of leadership affects you personally as a leader. So tell a story about taking over a new leadership position, say maybe your first call in ministry. What were you feeling? What were your hopes? How did it turn out? And did the river stop flowing for you? I like that question. Good one, dear. Yeah. Or invite someone you know who has a good story to tell it, and you maybe interview the speaker. We put this in self-smart because of the emotional response to new positions, the desire to present well, the desire to be a good leader, effective leader. And there's a little bit of people flavor, too, because of the group dynamics that you experience as a new leader. But we put this specifically in self for you to consider your own leadership. So, as a special effect, this is something you can give to your people to do as individuals. Invite them to be watching in the coming week for situations where God is leading them to be leaders in faith. So maybe they need to take a risk and look at ways of sharing their faith. And how willing are they to take those risks? And do they feel more excitement or fear about being a leader for God's work? And they're not alone in either one of those.
Okay, let's go on. The gospel lesson for year A, Ordinary 31, is Matthew 23, verses 1 through 12. In this passage, we have finished up with the confrontations between Jesus and the various parties of the religious leaders. And so he turns to his disciples to talk about it, to kind of debrief on it. And he said, okay, the scribes and Pharisees, listen to what they teach you and do what they teach you because they have the authority of Moses, but don't do what they do because they're not doing what they're telling you to do anyway. So when it comes to your practice, then you should be a humble disciple and go straight from the Lord, basically, is kind of what I hear him saying. They like to do things to be seen and to get recognition. And he said, that's not the way to be a disciple. But as for you, don't let anyone call you rabbi, and don't you call anyone father, and don't call anybody an instructor, and don't you be called instructor, because those roles are all taken. You have one rabbi, you have one father in heaven, you have one instructor, the Messiah. So if you want to be great, you'll be a servant, and whoever is exalted will be humbled, and the humble will be exalted. So it's kind of like it has a feeling like render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. So give respect and listen to the Pharisees for their role as teachers of the law, but give to God the things that belong to God. That's where the real power is. We're going to take a look at most of the intelligences here. We have Word Smart illustration. We have both illustration and special effect in iSmart, a special effect in Body Smart, an illustration for music, an illustration for People Smart, and both in Self Smart. So, Molly.
Okay. For Word Smart, we're looking at verse 3, where Jesus tells the disciples, do whatever they teach and follow it. So we thought a way to demonstrate that in a special effect would be to play a bit of Simon Says. This also has a little bit of body smart in it too, because you're moving around. But what we're going to do with Simon Says is we're going to start out with you saying, put your hands on your head, and you put your hands on your head. And then, you know, add whatever simple movements you want to do. You might need to brush up on how to play Simon Says. And then as you continue to play Simon Says, start adding a lot of interpretation into why you're doing it this way, or just do something and don't just say, this is what we're going to do now. The idea being that as the simple instructions will start getting lost and obscured by interpretation and authority, which is essentially kind of what happened with the Pharisees and the teachers, is they began paying more attention to the wrappings and the trappings as opposed to the law itself, the simple words themselves. So that could be really interesting. That could be a lot of fun.
So do you have an example of what you might use?
So put your hands on your head. Now, because Moses stood like this as he was looking over the land, that stand in a way you imagine Moses might have done that. And, you know, and then just add ridiculous things. I walk into the church this way, so you must do it this way. And just get to the point where you completely stop playing the game. It just becomes ridiculous. So,
and maybe you start saying the things, but not doing them.
Yes, exactly. Yes, right, right.
Cool. For iSmart, in verse 6, Jesus is talking about how the Pharisees and scribes love the seats of honor and the best seats in the house. So for illustration, have you ever had the best seats in the house? And what was the view like there? We're putting this in iSmart because of the space mm-hmm. involved here and the views and such. So, but then you can roll in also, you know, are there perks? What are the perks of being in the best seats in the house, and how does it feel? So that gives you a little bit of self-smart there also. And then, well, while you're talking about that, to make a special effect out of it, you could show images of the box seats at a theater or at a sports stadium. Mm-hmm. And the views from there, looking down on all the peons in the peanut gallery. For verse 5, where it says that they loved to be seen by others, as you come into the chancel, into your worship space, wear a lot of unusual color and maybe a large hat or a big pair of sunglasses or something that is eye-catching.
And really unusual.
And unusual for mm-hmm. you, yeah. And so don't make any reference about it, except that you want to be seen. And I don't know, you could maybe come in and do the wave, you know, the Queen's wave, right? The royal wave, or, you know, something, drawing attention to yourself without saying that that's what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. See if anybody gets it when you get to that point where the verse is read.
Yeah. Back in verse 2, it says that the Pharisees and scribes sit on the seat of Moses. And so the Pharisees and scribes here are acting like gatekeepers or guardians or perhaps wardens, as it were, the turnkey, the hall monitor, or the crossing guard. And we put this in iSmart because of the movement that is implied in all of those, that you're going from one space into another. And those religious leaders held the keys for people to move from where they were to the kingdom of God, where they wanted and needed to be. Mm-hmm. So they have that role. But, you know, people who are charged with the safety and guidance of the people often get caught up in the minutiae of the job or in the authority of the job instead of doing the job. And if you remember MASH, then you might think of Frank Burns, who often found his way into that role. Then another illustration, the Pharisees' interpretive strategy for the Torah is kind of like reading a map and then going in a different direction once you figure out the right route, or having your GPS on and saying, that's fine, I'm not going that way.
Or I know where I am.
I know where I am, and turning it off, and then you get lost.
Yes, did that just this last Friday. I knew where I was going to my brother's house, so I turned off the GPS and wound up going down a different road. We had to call him saying, where are we? He said, oh, you're here. And then I turned my GPS back on. Hey, there I was.
By golly. Yeah. So again, iSmart because of the spatial movement there.
Right. For Body Smart, for a special effect, we're looking at verse 4 with the idea of the weighty burden that the Pharisees have placed on the people. So for a special effect to demonstrate this, have a partner chosen ahead of time and act out what Jesus says the scribes and the Pharisees do, loading up others with heavy burdens that they won't lift a finger to help with. So prepare a series of weights, weighty objects, boxes, whatnot, labeled as requirements like purity, obedience, poverty, holiness, fasting, things that some religious leaders preach but don't always practice, or whatever targets you want to preach about so long as you can practice them, right? Don't put anything out there that you aren't already doing.
No. Don't be a Pharisee.
So get your partner out there, and as you talk about these things, lay them on your partner. You could have a big backpack that you shove things in, or have them hold out their arms and put them in their arms, and just keep loading it up. And ahead of time, tell your partner at some point they need to complain. Okay, so they complain that, hey, this is heavy, and hey, you don't seem to be practicing the same way. So then when they complain, you then explain your privileged status as a teacher or instructor in verses 8 and 10 that exempts you from such things. So it's kind of an eye smart thing. So you're doing a visual representation of what the Pharisees have been doing. It's body smart because of the physical exertion. And it's also some people smart because we've got some drama in there and some interpersonal relationships. And then for music smart, we have a song called The Servant Song by Richard Gilliard. It was published in 1977 in Scripture in Song. I know it from New Song, Musical Expressions in Youth Ministry. And we have a link to a version of it, a YouTube version of it. So you can actually find a lot of different versions of it. I like the faster one myself.
It's a song about serving each other.
Yes.
So it would go in with the second half of the passage instead of what the Pharisees were doing.
Right.
Yeah. For people smart, in verse 3 and following, where Jesus is describing how the Pharisees and scribes teach things but don't do what they teach, and then that Jesus' disciples are supposed to listen to them and obey their teachings but not do what they do. Mm-hmm. And so it got me wondering, is that passive-aggressive behavior? I went looking up passive-aggressive behavior, and we've all experienced people who are passive-aggressive, and it's a way of undercutting the people around you with your behavior without outwardly saying, hey, I'm undercutting you. And that, so there's a flavor of that to what Jesus is saying, but it's not the same thing. I'm pretty sure that Jesus is not suggesting this sort of antisocial behavior. So take a look at the links and how they describe passive-aggressive behavior, and then talk about the difference between that and what Jesus is saying, which is, you know, recognize the authority of the Pharisees, but do the things that God requires, mm-hmm. not the things the Pharisees do. And see if you can help your folks understand that difference. Continuing to think about this, what Jesus is doing, there's an article that I came across on the Temple University website that talks about some tactics of resistance movements, and they're reminiscent to what Jesus seems to be doing here. The two points that they talk about are confrontation, which is the direct, out there, in your face,
flat out resistance,
mm-hmm. calling out the powers and all mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And then there's cultural politics, which is the negotiations behind the scenes, trying to win the hearts and minds of the people, as it were, and to control the teaching that's going on to shape how people understand the reality of their social setting. Mm-hmm. All right. And so that's kind of what Jesus has been doing in these couple chapters. He had the confrontation with the leaders, starting with his protest in the temple mm-hmm. on Palm Sunday, mm-hmm. and then the direct confrontation with all the different leaders. Mm-hmm. And now he's trying to teach the people, see what they're doing, but do differently, do what God requires, and go this different path. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting to think about that. And then there was also a book review that we have for a book called Resistance Tactics, and it's about passive resistance or nonviolent resistance. In this summary of the book, it gives several examples of nonviolent resistance movements and some of their strategies. So some of them succeeded and some of them didn't, but see how they bear some similarity to the setting where Jesus was teaching and ministering, and what Jesus was recommending. And so these are people smart because of the cultural, social interactions and the dynamics of trying to influence people.
And then finally, for self-smart, as an illustration of how power can go to your head, we have a link to an experiment that was designed in 2003 by Dr. Keltner, Deborah Grunfeld, and Cameron Anderson called the Cookie Experiment. In a nutshell, the Cookie Experiment is you take three individuals, put them in a room, identify one of them as being the leader, and have them discuss something, work on a problem, and come to some solutions. And as they're working, somebody comes in and brings in a plate that has five cookies on it. You put the plate in the middle of the table, walk out. Somebody is not going to get a second cookie. And the person who likely is going to get the second cookie is the leader, because they have assumed upon themselves a sense of privilege for having been identified as the authority in the room. It's an interesting study, and we've got a link to a variety of different places that have mentioned it. So it's just kind of a gentle reminder, maybe, that when we are identified and elevated as other and as special, that sometimes we take advantage of that. We may not mean to. We may think we're servant leaders, but do we use our privilege sometimes?
Do like being called rabbi, right?
Yes, indeed. So for special effect, what titles do you have at work, church, at home, in your organizations? And how much stock do you put in that title? And how does Jesus' teaching in verses 8 through 10 sit with you in terms of those titles? That's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website, www.morethanhearing.org. Or at our Facebook page, facebook.com/morethanhearing, or give us a tweet at morethanhearing, or you can email us at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you try any of these suggestions, or maybe you get an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We would really love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship preparation.
Be sure to look for the show notes, links, and resources on our website. We publish our worksheets on each text so that you can see some of our ideas that didn't make it into the podcast. They could be helpful and give you a spark. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast using the iTunes, Android, or RSS links at the bottom of the show notes, or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. You can find us on the iTunes Store, too, and you can subscribe there directly. If you like the show, you can help us by writing a review at iTunes, as it helps other people find us more easily, and also by sharing the show with your friends and colleagues. We'll be back with another installment next week, so in the meantime, stay subscribed
and be smart.
The number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.